The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. Alongside Kelly Bidlett, everybody. Who's alongside who? Are you alongside me or am I alongside you?
It's a good question.
I don't know. We're alongside.
Or if I'm alongside you, nobody's alongside me then.
Nobody dares be on your left side. Good morning to you all. What's up, party people? Good show today. Mark Borchert on baseball. Jake Hahn on the NHL playoffs. The second round of which began last night in Toronto with the Leafs. Leafs holding on for victory. We'll talk to Jake about that in the games tonight and beyond. Drew Dinsick, who now joins us hour number two instead of hour number one on the show these days. He will talk NBA playoffs with us, of course, as well as anything he has in tennis as they begin in Rome now, the final clay court tournament before the French Open. Drew will join us. What an NBA night. We will get to this momentarily. Paul Carr on the Champions League. A little midweek soccer action with Paul Carr coming up as well. We must begin, Kelly, with the National Basketball Association. And I just want to say I am glad that at the end of the show yesterday, I stopped it down and said I was uncomfortable with the one-way favorite traffic that we got yesterday on the show. Because, oh my God, the conference semifinals, three straight games now to begin, starting with Indiana 2 days ago. But then last night with both the Knicks and the Nuggets, all three dogs not only cover, but all three dogs win game ones outright. Unbelievable. And we have to start. Let's start with the second one last night, Kelly, where the Nuggets beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 121 to 119 in a game where they hadn't had the lead prior to that final score. Since it was 24-22, that was the previous time they had the lead in this game. If you missed it, if you were trapped under a heavy object, let me just give you the real brief cliff notes on this. Denver led by 8 in the first quarter. That was erased really quickly. OKC would lead after the first quarter by a point. Then the Thunder would lead by as many as 14 during the second quarter. They ended up with a 10-point margin of the 10-point margin going into the locker room, 60-50 did OKC. Then Denver, it was kind of this back and forth thing. Denver got within 7 in the third quarter. OKC would push it back up to 14, 82-68. Then Denver would knock it down to 5 with 3:29 left in the period, and that would be the margin heading into the final quarter, 90-85 Thunder. But then OKC would kick it back up to a double-digit lead. Remember, the spread here in this game got all the way up to 10.5. It wasn't that 24 hours ago, but it did tick up to 10.5. So it was 113-102 Oklahoma City with 4:31 left in the game. And Kelly, by the line, that's when the shenanigans began.
Yeah.
Denver goes on a 12-2 run to cut it to 115-114. Jokic, the greatest player on earth, hits a three from the top of the key to cut it to 115-114. Then Denver gets the ball with a chance to take the lead with 46 seconds left, but a missed Westbrook three try, then a Gordon miss. Caruso gets the board. SGA fouled with 14 seconds left. He hits both free throws. OKC up 117-114. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is where the coaching malpractice began for Mark Daigneault. Jokic, now keep in mind here, 14 seconds left, OKC up 117-114. OKC always employs the foul when up three strategy. I have read numerous articles this morning. I watched Inside the NBA last night. It is amazing how many people do not get what the problem was. These articles say, oh, fouling up three backfired on him. No, it's not that simple. That's not what happened. Charles Barkley still doesn't get it. What went down? I'll tell you who did get it in the end. Kenny Smith got it, and the play-by-play announcer, Ian Eagle, did a great job during the broadcast. He got this. The problem was that OKC tactically messed up the thing by fouling too soon twice in a row.
Yeah.
So 14 seconds left. OKC's up 117-114. Jokic is immediately fouled. And when I say immediately, I mean with 12.9 seconds left. He's immediately fouled. He hits two free throws. It's 117-116. So, of course, not of course, but SGA breaks free to the hoop. immediately, 119, 116, literally like within a second, he breaks free to the hoop. So it's a three-point game again. So Denver, same situation. They're down three. OKC wants to do the foul up three thing, but they foul Gordon in the backcourt with 10.7 seconds left. Literally, barely any time is going off the clock here. Gordon hits both free throws. It's 119 to 118. Holmgren then fouled with 9.8 left because Denver's got to get the ball back. And Holmgren misses not one, but two free throws. Brown with the rebound. He pushes it up to Gordon from three. Good with 2.8 seconds left. Desperation heave by OKC. Nowhere near it. Nuggets steal it in Oklahoma City, 121-119. And I just, again, it is amazing to me, Kelly, that you watch inside the NBA after this, just to use Barkley as one example. And Barkley's whole thing is, well, I mean, if he makes both free throws, if Holmgren makes both free throws, it's not, this, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. No. If you keep fouling so quickly, and when I say so quickly, with one, like 1 second or one and change, 1 second and change, on consecutive possessions, what you are in essence doing is creating more tests for yourself to have to continue to hit two free throws.
Right.
Eventually, now I know Holmgren missed both, but eventually you're going to miss one. Holmgren happened to miss two.
Which equates and means more opportunity for the other team.
And the game still has enough time left in it for them to advance the ball. If you just take off a few seconds each time, and let's say then he misses the two free throws, it's probably a desperation heave by Denver also. They just completely botched the way they did it. And the fact that you read articles and articles this morning, oh, the big fouling up three backfired on him. No, it's how they did it.
I think the thing for me, actually, that was one of the first times last night where I was very much... Because you and I are pretty pro foul when you're up three, right?
Absolutely.
Last night was the first time where I was like, hey, time score situation, right? We talk about this all the time. Time score situation and when to employ that. The first foul, while it was quick, I was okay with, Gil. I was like, okay, we're going to go to foul up three. That was really quick, but you know what? Jokic was very aware about what was about to go on. He was going to try to get a shot up anyways. All right, fine. But then Jokic is on the bench. And you foul Aaron Gordon in the backcourt like you're talking about. And I was very much like, okay, just let this play out. Let this play out. You're up three. There's 10 seconds left on the clock. They got to take it the length of the court. They got no timeouts. I was okay with letting it play out at that point. I was shocked they went and fouled him that quickly. To your point, even if you wanted to still foul, you could have run four more seconds off the
clock,
letting him get up.
Even if you wanted to still foul.
At that point, I was for them letting it go.
Well, I wasn't, but I understand your point, but I wasn't. But I still believe you let a few seconds run off, and then you felt like you always do. I'll tell you who else, and I was ready to give him Coach of the Year if they won 70 games. I'll tell you who took a while to get it after the game last night. The initial questions to Mark Daigneault after that game, you know, would you have it back? Would you do it? Well, and then finally, after like a paragraph, he finally conceded, maybe we did it too quickly. I was like, boy, that took a while for you to get there.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, especially
God.
When that was involving veteran players, too. I was a little surprised, but I'll tell you, though, man, that was I had against the spread, you know, first half, full game, first half gets there, full game. You're watching it, let it slip away. Right. And I think when we talk about both these losses from these teams, I think there is one thing they had in common that I want to bring up later. But you're watching that slip away, and it's going through my mind, Gil, all right, well, I'm going to lose this ATS bet. But, like, there was, for the second time in 9 days, Aaron Gordon just to the side of my head with a 2x4 out of nowhere. Because at no point did I think they were going to lose that game until that happened.
That and, of course, the dunk. Did he have his fingertips off it against the Clippers?
Second time, man. I was like, wow, that really just happened. I was sitting there stunned after the game.
Jokic, the greatest player on earth, 42-22-6 in this game.
So,
still got his fastball, you think?
Yeah.
42-22-6. Gordon, the aforementioned Aaron Gordon, 22-14, including the game winner. Murray, 21. Westbrook, 18. SGA, 33-10-8 in defeat. The Nuggets committed 18 turnovers in this game to OKC's 9, but a 63-43 rebounding advantage helped to offset that a bit.
Ding, ding, ding. I mean, Gil,
I hate myself because I mentioned on the show Nuggets, you know, 5-1. That seemed too high. Did I pull the trigger on it? I did not. But you know what I did this morning? I did. Nuggets up a game. I took them at plus. Let me get the number right. Plus 267. I took them up a game. By the way, I also took a adjusted series price in another series, which we'll get to after the break. But I took the Nuggets plus 267. I just, you know, the cliche of Rudy Tomjanovich. Never underestimate the heart of a champion. Look, I think this is going to be a long series. I don't think anybody's blowing anybody out here. But I just think you give me plus money on the Nuggets. And this is what we said yesterday, though. The advice that Carl gave was sound, right? Hey, if you like the dogs, maybe you wait a game. But I kept saying after every time, I'm like, or the train leaves the station.
Yeah. No, you were dead right on that.
And the train has kind of left the station on all three of these, but not exactly. Not exactly. And so I still think, like, I'm not going to let it leave anymore. Let's put it that way. So I grabbed Denver in this one, and I'll mention the other one. Well, I'll say right now. I grabbed Indiana. Indiana plays tonight. I grabbed Indiana plus the points tonight against the Cavs in game two. I grabbed them for the series. The adjusted series price on the Pacers at plus 191, them up a game as well. The Pacers, I mean, this is the deal with this series. Evan Mobley and DeAndre Hunter, both questionable for the Cavs tonight. Mobley with the ankle injury. Hunter dislocated his right thumb, both considered questionable. And Darius Garland still remains questionable, right? Risk of missing a four straight game with a toe injury.
And we learned yesterday that Atkinson considers questionable and doubtful the same thing. Yes. So I have no idea what this means tonight, Gil.
How is this still 9 tonight? Listen, I get how it's still because Cleveland's the number one seed, but this is, again, if you pull yourself away from regular season too close to the sun, how's this 9? Coming back, the Knicks and the Celtics next.
The Sports Betting Network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now, you can check out Greg Peterson's MLB picks, Tyler Shoemaker's WNBA win total best bets, and Zach Cohen's Warriors T-Wolves series preview. Later today, you can check out Wes Reynolds' Truist championship preview. Dan Karpuch makes his VSiN debut with NBA props best bets. Hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And Lou Finocchiaro's UFC 315 preview. Right now, you can sign up for our annual subscription. Get 14 months for only $199 with promo code PRO. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. Always appreciate y'all's feedback every day. Best listeners in the game. I cannot be talked off this position because you would be wrong. They are the best listeners in the game. This is from Master of Puppets. 4 games in 27 days showed up tonight. That was the stat I gave yesterday, that the Timberwolves had played 4 meaningful games full strength.
Timberwolves.
Yeah, Thunder. Thunder had played 4 meaningful games in 27 days. I don't know if that showed up or not. I mean, I think that's convenient to sort of retrofit it, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if I felt that way. I was very, very impressed with the Nuggets and what they did. Throughout that game, to keep it close, even when it felt like it could easily turn into a runaway by OKC at times, and they just kept keeping it close. And then, we've talked about it. Maybe we haven't made big enough of a deal. It's Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets, right? You give them a chance and just leave them in the game long enough. This is what's going to happen, I guess.
It's like I said against the Clippers. What could go wrong? Does the other team still have the best player in the world? They have home court? Yeah. Big Kahuna, agree. That was idiotic. Wait a few seconds, and especially the one in the backcourt, terrible. Sonny 3.
It was awful.
Sonny 3, absolutely inexcusable. Rob, Seahawk 97, yes. And on top of that, they don't have a timeout left, even though you had the lead the whole time. This is from, let's see here.
I mean, that's the 3-point, the fouling of 3, like on that last, I'm playing that out. Like, I'm looking around, I'm like, Jokic is off the court. They don't have a timeout. They got to take it the distance.
I don't know if I'm playing it out, but again, it's the timing. Like, you can't, it went from, the clock barely moved. Yeah. Eventually, you're going to miss a free throw. Matthew Mayberry, is there anywhere you can go to look at baseball standings for each month? I can't find it anywhere. I will have the updated May when Mark Borchardt comes on here momentarily, Matthew. What a Padres win yesterday.
And I'll say take everything they do with a grain of salt, but StatMuse usually does that stuff, right?
StatMuse
usually just punch in most wins in May.
It's not as easy as punching in. You have to, like, say the right words.
Grain of salt.
Yeah.
Be careful with it is my point, yes.
Fred Currier enjoying the show by poolside, saying Kelly-style listening live at 10 a.m. Mike Tierney, the worst endgame strategy ever. Thought I was watching a movie. Brad Billups, yo, at what point do Vegas residents start to buy into the Las Vegas A's? They are scrappy. They beat the Mariners last night 7-6. Jacob Wilson, leaflet, with game-winning RBI and extras yesterday. Joe Pete and I are like, we should go to Sacktown for a game. It's that exciting. Kevin Ryan.
I don't know at what point, though, Las Vegas residents are getting excited about the A's. Have you felt the excitement at all, Gil?
Oh, it's palpable.
Yeah, I have not felt it from anybody.
No, because they're not going to be here to, like, you know.
Yeah, what is it, three more years?
28 or something like that. Kevin Ryan. Gil, if I was fortunate enough to have an NBA MVP vote and I cast mine this season for SGA over the Voker. Oh, wait a minute. Let me start that again because I can't read. Gil, if I was fortunate enough to have an NBA MVP vote, I would have cast mine this season, I think he's saying, for SGA over the Joker. After watching last night's game, I would feel this morning like a total buffoon. Oh, that's right. They don't watch the games. Well, SGA was great, too. Let's not go crazy. Torch D, the one who put the satin on your panties. The absolute disrespect to Jokic before last game. He was plus 440 to lead the series in points. Give me that. Well, I hope you got it. Anyway. DJ Jams, based on last night's NBA games, we have to decide if your new name is now Gil Nostradamus or Gil the Mush. Oh, meaning that I mush the good teams. I see what you're saying. Larry Fresh, did you guys see this? Hilarious. Gil, your Charles Barkley was dead on. Oh, I don't know what show you're referring to, but just the Charles Barkley inability to understand that it was the timing of it. Oh, Holmgren makes... Well, yeah, but eventually you're going to miss a free throw. How is that that difficult? By the way, my brother, who is a half-baked NBA fan, he called after the game and he figured it out. He goes, was the problem that they fouled too soon? I'm like, yes, exactly, both times.
There also seemed to be a lot of confidence when Chet was going to the line. When Chet was going to the line, I was very worried. I was like, uh-oh. Like, this is probably one at best.
Well, he's a decent free throw shooter. He's a 74% or something like that. Yeah.
But younger guy in a big-time situation, right?
Yeah.
It showed up.
It showed up. Before the Nuggets and the Thunder last night, the Knicks pulled off what was... I mean, the Nuggets was kind of a hold-my-beer situation because what the Knicks did was just as incredible. Maybe not just as incredible, but almost as incredible. Boston led by 20, 75-55 with 5:47 left in the third quarter. Maybe it was more incredible. Knicks got it down to 6 by the end of the quarter. It was 84-75, actually, a 9-point Celtics lead after 3. Knicks came all the way back. They tied it up at 86 with 7:26 to go. Erased the 20-point deficit in less than a quarter's time. On an Ananobi jam, they did it. Then they was also tied at 89 and tied at 91-91. By the way, Reggie Miller, I have in my notes here when I do the notes of the game, it says, Reggie Miller wants you to know Brunson is the closer and clutch. Oh. How many times did Reggie Miller call Brunson the closer and clutch? Was it like 10 consecutive possessions? We get it, Reggie.
It's been ridiculous for the whole playoff so far.
We get it, Reggie. He is. You're right. What was Stephanie Reddy's first question to Aaron Gordon after the game last night?
I believe it was, why did you take a 3 instead of a 2 when you were up 1? Well, I heard that correctly.
Stephanie, I had a lot of time to really consider all my possibilities at that point. Anyway, back to the Knicks. Then the Knicks take the lead, 94-91 on a Brunson 3, because he's the closer, with 4:07 to go. First lead since 33-31. Then they go up 6, Kelly, 97-91 on another Brunson 3. But the Celtics with a 7-0 run, capped by a Derek White 3, to go up 98-97 with 2:15 left. And a Ananobi 3 puts New York back up 100-98, but a Holiday bucket ties it at 100 apiece with 53 seconds left. And because Steve Fezzik has the over, I absolutely know this is going to overtime because he's the biggest luck box there's ever been created on Earth.
This game feels like 2 days ago at this point.
It really does. Ananobi misses. White gets the rebound. So Boston calls timeout with 28.1 seconds left. Tatum misses a 3. Their 43rd missed 3 of the night at that point. Miles McBride board with 6 seconds left. And then Knicks with a chance to win it. Brunson misses a 6-foot banker. I don't know how that didn't go in. Horford did just enough on defense. And, of course, we're going overtime.
Like, just enough to, I don't know, kind of scare him, kind of affect the shot. I'm still shocked that didn't go in.
Yeah, because he makes everything.
And then I thought for sure when he missed that, I was like, well, Celtics obviously roll here.
But the end of overtime was just like the Knicks up 3, 108-105. Towns fouls Brown. Jaylen Brown before the gather behind the arc with 3 seconds left. So they wanted to employ they had one to give. Mm. He just fouled Jaylen Brown before Jaylen had the gather. By the way, did we ever think there'd be a time in the NBA where the word gather would mean so much? before the gather. Mikhail, and then with 3 seconds left, Boston chanced to tie, but Mikhail Bridges just completely ties up Jaylen Brown. Just snatched the ball.
That was awesome.
Ball game. Anunoby, 29 in 45 minutes. Brunson, 29 in 43 minutes. Hart, 14 and 11 in 45 minutes. The Tibbs strategy. Oh, Brown and Tatum each with 23. By the way, the Celtics set a record. I mean, this is the headline of this game. The Celtics went 15 of 60 from behind the arc. 15 of 60 from three. They took 60 threes and only made 15 of them. 45 misses, the new all-time playoff record, shattering the old record of 40 misses. By the way, in the third quarter alone, the Celtics took 20 shots. Guess how many were threes?
13.
19. 19 of 20 shots in the third quarter were from behind the arc. Now, I call the Warriors the most beautiful thing in basketball. I don't know what the Celtics are, but like the Warriors, they're cutting to the hoop. They're doing all this beautiful thing throughout their arc of championships. The Celtics are just like, what are they playing? And when they hit, they win. When they don't, they don't. It's like, all right, great.
That's, I mean, it's what it's been for 3-4 years
yes,
now.
That's there. Been their
it's
thing. Just,
the one that it's so frustrating, because I think, you know, as we sit here this morning, Gil, the results of these games, like this one, is so much less surprising, because the Celtics, it feels like, do this. They have this type of game once in every big series, at least once, where it's okay. They're just trying to play the numbers game. The numbers game went against them. They had plenty of open looks from three. A lot of them didn't go down. But I think the frustrating part, when you are, you know, when you were backing this team either as a fan or as a bettor, it's the whole tin cup par's good enough to win. And when you're up 20 in the third, it's you got to have a changeup to go
yes.
to get to finish these games
oh
instead of continuing
God.
Launching threes, which then, if you're missing them, allows these teams back in it. And I think one of the big takeaways, I think, for me last night, Gil, from both these games is you saw two teams, Denver and Boston, who have been hunted in each of those conferences now for a few years, and going up against two teams that made offseason adjustments over the past couple years to bolster their roster to go up against these teams. And you saw it work a little bit on one side. OG Anunoby had a big game. Mikhail Bridges coming up big in the clutch. Those two guys were added to this roster to take away these wing players on Boston. And on the other side, OKC, you added bigs to handle Jokic. You got out-rebounded by 20, man. You still got a problem.
Boston, a 10.5-point favorite tomorrow night in Game 2. OKC, an 11-point favorite in Game 2 tomorrow night.
I laid 9.5 with Boston last night. Numbers game.
I took Indiana and I took Denver on the adjusted series prices. I did not take the Knicks because of all those minutes. Tibbs has those guys logging. Just couldn't do it.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
ProfitX is offering the best odds all baseball season long. ProfitX, a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states. The first of its kind in the U.S., you'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sports books. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Now they're getting closer to how much it really guarantee you the best odds on. They're getting closer. They're drifting up towards the actual. I mean, it is it's phenomenal. You can even request your own odds, by the way. Download ProfitX today with code VSIN and earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. Check them out at ProfitX.com. Skill Alexander, by the way. Kelly Bidlin here as well. Just want to read a couple tweets. Jack at Jack14770548. RotoWire has a monthly tab that displays record by month in their MLB standings as well, he says. And Chris Heath taking shots at the Vegas people. He says, I think you mean the Salt Lake City A's. Oh, what he's doing right there.
I don't get it.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't think they're coming here. I just want to also say this. So again, I'm on Indiana tonight plus the points. Didn't touch the Warriors T-Wolves game.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Game one in that series. I am on the adjusted series price, both Denver and Indiana series. And then in baseball, yesterday I gave out the Padres first five, which didn't hit, and the full game, which did hit, both at plus money. A 4-run eighth for the Padres to erase a 3-0 deficit against both Devin Williams and Luke Weaver. out of the Yankees' pen. The Padres go to town and they win that game 4-3. So here are the updated May standings, just to let everybody's been asking. The updated May standings, the Padres are the only undefeated team thus far in May. They're 4-0. 4-0 with 22 games left to go. There are a few other 4-1s, though. One of those is the aforementioned Athletics. How about those pesky A's? They're 4-1, but so too are the Cubs and Royals. So Cubs, Royals, and Athletics, all 4-1. Padres are the only 4-0. Then we have seven teams with three wins. Tigers, Dodgers, Nationals, and Guardians all at 3-1. White Sox, Giants, Cardinals all at 3-2. So that's your very early May standings by popular demand there. And Padres tonight, Michael King, their ace, is on the hill. I am on the Padres first five and full game again tonight against the Yankees and Clark Schmidt. I don't understand this number. Michael King with the 2.78 fielding independent. Clark Schmidt, small sample size granted, but still a 5.52 fielding independent. So again, for the second straight day, Padres money line on both the full game and the first five. And I played this yesterday, although I didn't give it out. I'm doing it again in Sactown. It is a fly ball pitcher versus a fly ball pitcher once again in Sacramento. It soared over again. It took four innings for the game to go over yesterday with two fly ball pitchers. And I see no reason why not to do it again today. So I'm doing it. Mariners Athletics over 5.5. It's a little higher than it was yesterday. Over 5.5, first five at even money. Over 9.5 for the full game there in Sacramento. And so, yeah, that's the deal. And I'm just trying to get you the pitchers' names here once again, because it's Springs going for the Athletics, and I'm completely blanking on the name of the pitcher for the Mariners. I'll get it for you right now. It is Hancock against Springs. Thank you. Good God. Sorry about that. Mark Borchardt joins us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. We'll see if he agrees with those two plays and what he has on his own. How you doing, Mark?
Gil, I'm really disappointed in you that you can't remember Emerson Hancock. Like, such a literary name, too.
That's right. Ralph Waldo Emerson Hancock, if Chris Berman was doing this highlight. Yes.
That's true, or you could also go John Hancock,
you
too.
You could.
So, like, I guess there's two different allusions there in that one name.
How do you feel about this Padres line tonight? Doesn't make any sense to me. You?
I've got it at -113. I think, for me, King's a good pitcher. I have him, like, 14% better than average, and I've got Schmidt at about league average. But, you know, Gil, I'm looking – those starter numbers are a median – of the last 17 games they've pitched. So it's probably going to be different than because I guess maybe these guys have, what, seven games, something like that, under their belt this season.
Schmidt does not, but King does. Yeah, this is the old revenge spot for Michael King, by the way, for those scoring at home. So I'm on that. What are you on today? Forget me. What are you doing?
You know what? It's a really crappy card. The base winner parlay is decent, but I actually kind of went against the model with one of the legs. I've got the base winner parlay is Philly and Atlanta, and you risk one to risk 1.71. And, you know, this Tampa Bay team, they've been pretty good, like, by the numbers. You look at their expected win percentage, and it's up there. It's like 20.4 and 13.6. I don't think that they're as good as they've played, and that's, you know, that goes down to sample size, and I think it's just a little bit too early in the season to kind of use a month of sample to define a team. But both these pitchers are similar. You got Wheeler with 96 percentile stuff plus. You've got Rasmussen, 98 percentile stuff plus, and it kind of translates over to the K percentage, at least last 17 median for both guys. You got Wheeler at 32.4%. That's in the upper 3 percentile of baseball, Gil. And then you've got Rasmussen, 25.4%, 82 percentile. And there's nothing to really be ashamed of as far as that goes. I think the main difference for me is this long-term offensive projection. I've got the Phillies 7th in baseball versus a Tampa Bay team that, I guess controversially to some, maybe, would be 23rd in baseball. So for me, the price of this game should be -200. It's in the market at minus 120. And then the Braves, I'm just going to go with a horse here, another to 12 ranked base winner number for sale. And I've got it priced at minus 193, and it's in the market at worse than that. But, you know, sometimes you got to play against the damn model, Gil. I don't do it often, but when I do, hopefully it wins.
Phillies Braves, the base winner parlay of the day. How much does that pay average-wise?
It's like plus 171.
Plus 171 from base winner. By the way, the other thing I didn't mention about the Padres and the Yankees, I said yesterday that they were going to activate Jackson Merrill, the Padres, last year's NL Rookie of the Year runner-up. They did not, but he is activated for tonight. That is official. So they get Jackson Merrill back in the lineup. They will get Cronenworth back scheduled for Friday. So full strength coming offensively beginning tonight with Merrill for the Padres. Do you have a straight bet for us, sir?
I've got two. I don't know if they're straight. They're run line bets.
Okay.
And I'm going to get the odds. I don't think I've bet on this team for 2 years, but the White Sox plus 1.5 minus 110. Then the other play, the Rockies plus 1.5 minus 104. And I just think that that's too high of a price for Detroit in Colorado with Jackson Jobe pitching, who I've got as probably one of the bottom 10 pitchers based on the advanced metrics. And then looking at the White Sox Royals matchup, you know, to me, Burke and Lugo, the way I rate the pitchers, are about the same. And this Kansas City bullpen is bottom 10. Of course, the White Sox is my worst bullpen still. And then you got the Royals at 20th offensively. I just think that minus 205 where they're in the market's a little high. I've got it priced on the money line. Kansas City should be favored, but like minus 150. So I played both those teams, and I don't know if this is like a first in the last 3 years playing Colorado and the White Sox on the same day, Gil.
Wow. White Sox and Rockies both on the run line for Mark Borcher. Did I hear that correctly? Wow. And both of them, by the way, if you're wondering, do they both suck on the run line? Obviously, they stink in real life. The answer is Colorado, yes. They also stink on the run line. That makes sense because they play games at Coors. The scoring is going to be more volatile. The White Sox, actually, kind of a break-even proposition, just a tick below zero on the run line this year. Before you go, I just want to ask you this question. This is actually not my question. Kelly and I got this from Michael Montesano, who is a regular guest on this show. He does college basketball with us. He does football. He does basketball. He loves doing awards. But he knows that you're an Arizona Diamondbacks guy. You're a backer of the Arizona Diamondbacks in terms of being bullish on them this year. Ketel Marte, he had a hammy, pulled his hamstring on April the 4th, and he's been out since then. And there are a couple games above 500. They're good. They just haven't really performed well. And I'm curious, like, when you do your assessment and your modeling, a guy like that, I always used to say when I did it, it was like, well, one guy, it might be overrated when you take him out of the lineup. It's when you have two or more, then it really magnifies. But has he, by the way, it's 18 and 17. Pardon me, I got their number wrong. I had 18 and 16. So one game above 500 for the Diamondbacks. Does his absence downgrade them monumentally from your numbers?
You know, it's a really good question. I'm trying to get a precise number on it. So I've got like, I remember, because I'm looking at a 120 right now for their offense overall. So that's 20% better than average from a run projection standpoint. And I think it was like maybe 12% better. So that one really did impact it, and it has to do with like where they hit in the lineup as well. And I like Marte better, like from a base run standpoint. His production over the last 500 plate appearances is actually a little bit better than Corbin Carroll. So that would be surprising to some. But yeah, to answer his question, I guess you could roughly say about a 10% weighted runs created. So
wow.
It's like a half a run offensively.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's significant. Mark, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Gil. Thanks.
Mark Borchardt at BaseWinner. BaseWinner.com does his BetUS show every day as well. We'll come back. Hockey with Jake Hahn next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Take your betting to a whole nother level. With First Bet, whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Triple Crown, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. We get tweets. Beating the book, always appreciated. This is from Matthew Mayberry checking in again. He goes, I have the A's first 10 wins in May at 80-1 and the Tigers 12-1 for May. I literally cannot find one site that tracks monthly standings. It's driving me nuts. So thank you for the updates. Yeah, StatMuse, RotoWire, those are the two. Although they both require, I believe, a little finagling to get there.
Oh, okay.
So it's not super simple. But again, we'll have them here on a numbers game. If not daily, we'll have them, at least weekly. That's for sure. And then we'll get closer to daily as the month nears its end. Jim Campbell, with the Celtics up 20 and New York having Cat, Bridges, and Hart in foul trouble, why was their strategy not to drive the ball to the hoop? I'm saying, man, they will get an uncontested shot or they get the New York starters to foul out. Seems to make more sense than chucking up threes. Absolutely.
And that's always like, it's the lasting criticism of Tatum and Brown, right? It's, you got to be, that's got to be part of the game. You got to be able to drive it to the rim, create contact. Yeah. I mean, just again, par is good enough to win. Stop launching three after three and clank, clank, clank.
Brutal. Missoula deserves a lot of criticism, and some people don't seem to want to give it to him.
The problem is I don't really expect anything to change because they won a championship last year.
What are they going
to
do?
And what are they going to do? That's all they know how to play.
That's all they know how to play.
Yeah.
Mike Rouse, can we get Mark's insight, Mark Borchardt, into the prison cell windows he has in the background? Oh, I missed that. Did he have prison cell windows in the background? Borchardt? I missed that.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't catch that either.
The numbers guys. Gilly, where's them tennis picks? I didn't have any. I thought I was, but they played about, 10 to 15 matches. It was like 10 matches, non-qualies today in Rome, and I didn't like any of them from a betting perspective. So it's a full bore schedule of tennis beginning tomorrow, which means I will have tennis picks in the overnight tonight. Jack Olaquire. Gil, I'm with you on the Padres for May, but definitely passing on the hometown White Sox. Good luck to Mark Borchardt with the White Sox tonight. Don't think I can go there either. Eric Biggio from Will Hill Caesars. Rooting hard for Mark's Rockies and White Sox today from his book's perspective. Those teams are always on our needs behind the counter. Just add the Marlins next time and we can have a trash team three-teamer.
That's great.
You know what Eric told us yesterday, me and Fezzik? He told us that the Padres may most wins. And I did not bet at William Hill Caesars. I bet at Circa. But he said at William Hill Caesars, because of everybody who tailed on that bet, they are in for six figures if the Padres win most May. Wins.
Wow. Okay. All right.
They're stuck for six figures. So how about that?
Sorry, Caesars.
Numbers game. Just following suit. Let's go. Let's get it done. Not that we, wish the worst on you, Eric, but just think that's an interesting stat. Let's talk some hockey. Jake Hahn joins us now, everybody. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4. That's the number 4, J-H-A-H-N. For co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL. How you doing, Jake?
Doing great, guys. I should have worn my Padres hat for the occasion. Sometimes I do. I've been heavy on the Padres this year. I was on them last night, too. Great comeback against the New York Yankees, which as a Jays fan, I appreciate as well, even though I realistically know the Jays aren't going to catch the Yankees at any point. I still love seeing the Yankees lose in that rain-soaked game last night, guys. So loving all the baseball, the basketball last night as well. I know I'm here to talk some hockey. But second round, I got a little bit more time to maybe get in to some of these other sports, right? It winds down a little bit in hockey. So love those two NBA games last night as well.
Well, hockey finally let basketball have one night where they took the shine with the most incredible games.
Right.
The second round of the NHL playoffs did begin yesterday. The Leafs hold on, and I do mean hold on, against the Florida Panthers. They win it 5-4. The Toronto netminder Anthony Stolarz left the game after an elbow to the head from Florida's Sam Bennett. That was not called, by the way. He was replaced by Joseph Woll. Uncalled elbow to the head at 7:20 of the second period that occurred toward the end of a Florida power play. Toronto was up 3-1 at the time on two goals by William Nylander and one by Morgan Riley. By the way, Toronto scored 33 seconds and Nylander scored 33 seconds into this game. It ended up being 4-1 Toronto. Woll was in the game now in net, and they held on 5-4. Matthew Nyes with a score with 6 minutes left for Toronto kept Florida at bay. My question to you, Jake, is Toronto's got the series lead. Felica actually texted this while this was going on last night, and I looked at Woll's stats. Woll's stats in goal are not really that bad, but man, did he look in over his head last night, didn't he?
really tough spot for him to come in that game, Gil. And I thought if you really break it down, I mean, the numbers, okay, 3 goals on 20 shots, not the greatest. But I thought Florida played their best hockey of that game when Wall was in net, because the Leafs had a big lead. Teams tend to sit back, especially when you get up to a 3-goal lead, the way that the Leafs had. So you go into a bit of a defensive shell. And I thought for the first 40 minutes of that game, shockingly, Florida was very sleepy. Not to take anything away from what the Leafs were doing well. They kind of jumped them early. But I just thought, man, this doesn't look like the Panthers team that I'm used to watching, that I just watched beat Tampa Bay in 5 games. And they woke up in the third period. They were all over the Maple Leafs. And like I said, the Leafs kind of went into that defensive shell that teams tend to do with a big lead. So I thought Wall had to face the better version of the Panthers than Stolarz did before he went down. And I think the Leafs trust Joe Wall to win games. He's played playoff games for them in the past. There was a moment of this season, Gil, where I thought Joe Wall was going to be the starter game one of the postseason. And then Stolarz was just so good down the stretch. It really gave them no choice but to go with Anthony Stolarz. So being able to have a full warm up and knowing that you're going to start, I would totally trust Joe Wall to win games for the Maple Leafs. But ultimately, they're waiting and praying that Anthony Stolarz is healthy, because he has just been so good for them the last few months.
Yeah, ended up staying on the ice. Then he vomited, and then so he had to leave the game.
Crazy.
So let's go through these one by one. So the adjusted series price on the Panthers Maple Leafs, with the Leafs up 1-0. The Leafs now a slight favorite, -125. The Panthers +105. Is there a bet here?
I think I would need a little bit more to get behind the Panthers. The +105, though, because I've seen some different numbers floating around there. Anything plus money with the Panthers, I think I get a little bit more interested. I saw some, -110s on both sides. So that +105 number you guys are showing right there is a pretty nice price. On a Florida Panthers team, we know their pedigree. We know that they can certainly get back in this series. And I don't think home road matters as much in this one. Gil, you go back to the series these two teams played a couple of years ago. I think Florida had their most success in Toronto, and Toronto actually had their most success in Florida. So compared to maybe some other series that we're going to look at, I don't think home road matters as much here. I'm not backing the Florida Panthers at +105, but I certainly think they're going to have their moments in this series.
All right, 2 game 1s tonight in the NHL. Caps, Hurricanes. Hurricanes without home ice, a -160 favorite in the series. Caps +140 on the comeback. We're in Washington tonight for game one. Golden Knights and Oilers. This is one of these rare sort of betting things where the Oilers are the -115 series favorites, but the Knights will be a tick of a favorite in 4 of these games. If it extended to 7, they've got the home ice. But if you do the whole math of the aggregate, the Oilers are the slight series favorite. Do you have a play in either of the series for either of those two series prices for either of those two series or in game ones?
I do, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like this where we have 4 second-round series, Gil, and at least starting. Now, the Leafs are the favorites after the win last night, but before the series started, all 4 teams with home ice advantage are the underdogs in their series. It was just crazy, and honestly, some of them don't make a ton of sense to me. I believe Vegas should be favored. Now, in some places they are. It's kind of hovering around that pick'em range. You guys are showing -105 there. I think that's a really nice price on Vegas for the series. Edmonton showed so many flaws in that first round against the LA Kings. I thought LA just kind of choked it away, for lack of a better term. Games 3 and 4, they should have won both of those. They let Edmonton off the mat, and you can't give a dangerous team like the Oilers a second life. I don't think Vegas is going to do that. They're more defensively sound. I think they have the better goaltender in Adin Hill. So I like Vegas, and I really like that price for the Washington Capitals as well. This is going to be your ultimate, analytics versus eye test community type series, where the analytics point to Carolina. But Carolina, each playoffs, they tend to get into this funk where they struggle finishing on chances. They're fine generating those chances. I think that's what you could see throughout courses of this series. And I just think that's a great number on a Capitals team that's, to me, been way more consistent than Carolina all season long.
Caps on the series at +140. Anything on the game ones tonight on the specific games or no?
I am going to play the Capitals. I'm seeing them hovering between +115. Maybe you could shop and find a +120 out there. I think that's a really good price on the Capitals in game one. This is just a team I think I'm going to be playing all series if they're going to give these prices out. Obviously, they're not going to sweep Carolina. I doubt they will, but I like this play for game one. Lean towards the over in the late game, guys, but we have seen some movement. I was over 6, about -120 last night. Now it's flown up to over 6.5 at about minus 115 in that range. So people have the same idea. They're betting goals in Vegas Edmonton, which I can't fault them for doing. I think that's probably going to be your highest scoring series of the second round.
Yeah, 6.5 is the total in that game, game one tonight at T-Mobile Arena. By the way, real quick, 10 seconds or less, tomorrow night Dallas and Winnipeg start with Dallas as a minus 160 series favorite. Do you have a series play there?
I like the Jets at that price, guys. I think a lot of people are going to be loving on Dallas after beating Colorado, but Winnipeg, the whiteout, home ice advantage, I think matters the most in this series of all four that we just talked about.
Winnipeg plus 135, the President's Trophy winners. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it, man.